Session number 22680, Douglas Botting, Reel 1.
Doug Botting, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Salcot in India.
Which year was this?
1925.
Can you tell me the background to your having been born in the Punjab, please?
Yes, only that Deb was in the cavalry out there, and obviously met mother. I believe they met at a polo match, and got married. My sister came along, and unfortunately she passed away, and then I came along, and then I understand we moved back to Colchester in the barracks, where, strangely true, I moved to Colchester when I joined the army, in the Miani barracks, Colchester.
Do you have any memories of India?
No. I was only, I was only a couple of years old, I think, something like that.
So is Colchester really your hometown?
Oh, no. No, I was brought up in Greenwich.
Whereabouts in Greenwich?
It was King George Street, Greenwich.
How old were you when you left school?
Well, I left school, I think I was about 16, I think, approximately.
So that was a school in Greenwich, was it?
No, that was in Shoreditch Polytechnic.
And the war had already started?
Yes, we got bombed out from Greenwich, and eventually moved over to Morden, M-O-R-D-E-N, in Surrey, and from Surrey to Merton Park, and from Merton Park to Chessington, and Chessington down to Bognor.
Can you describe what happened when you got bombed out in Greenwich, please?
Well, we had an aerial torpedo that landed to the rear, and the following night we had a bomb landed on the opposite side, which actually the house was leaning over on the first night, and the bomb brought this back into position on the second night when I went out to the loo, which was an outside loo. The door just came off the hinges, so I said to my old aunt who brought me up, right, I think this is it, we better go down to Uncle Jack, which was my father's brother, who lived in Kennelly Road in Morden.
What was the address of the house that was bombed out?
85 King George Street.
Were you in the house when the aerial torpedo fell?
Well, we were outside in the shelter.
Was that the Anderson shelter?
Yes, the Anderson shelter.
What was it like in the Anderson shelter?
Got a bit damp now and again, I suppose, but it's a good job we had it, obviously. It saved our lives.
Was it frightening in the Blitz in Greenwich?
Oh, yes. Yes, we had all the dock fires going on there. Oh, it was a terrible, terrible mess, really. Shocking, you know. Our younger lives were brought up like that, but I suppose we got used to it after a time, but if you went out, you were always conscious and listening for bombs being dropped, fully aware of it.
Would you go in the shelter every night?
Only if the siren sounded, and then we would go, because we knew there could be trouble. And then we would go in the shelter, yes.
How did public morale stand up to the bombing?
Oh, very well, very well. I mean, we're a tough breed, you know.
Was there any hatred of the Germans who were carrying out the bombing?
Yes, I think so. Yes, I think there must have been, yes. Certain of it. Really.
Did you feel hostile yourself?
I don't now, but I must admit, the Normandy veterans went to Germany last year, and I didn't want to go. you know, for obvious reasons to myself, but I went there and, well, you've got to learn to forgive and forget, and I must say they treated us very well indeed.
Did you think at that time in 40-41 that the Germans would win the war?
No, I don't think so, because, you know, my father and all my uncles, they felt they wouldn't win it, and I know Father always used to say, well, there's water between us, they'll never beat us.
What were you studying at the Polytechnic?
I was studying a little bit of Latin, a little bit of pharmacy, a little bit of carpentry.
Can you tell me about going into the army, please?
Yes, I was called up, and we was met at Colchester Station with our suitcases and got into line. We were marched up behind a band to Miani Barracks at Colchester, and from there into the army, which we done our 6 weeks training, and then we were transferred to various regiments. I went into the Royal Berkshire Regiment.
Was that your choice?
Oh, no, no. In actual fact, I passed out for the Fleet Air Arm, which I was keen to fly. But when I wrote to my father and explained the position, he said, oh, well done, boy. I thought everything would be all right, but disappointed you're not coming into my regiment, which then was the 2nd Air Formation Signals. So I thought, oh dear, I'll apply for a transfer if I can. And I wrote to the army, and anyway, I finished up in the army. And when I went for my exam, they said, oh, pharmacy, straight away, we want you in the medical corps. So I explained to them that I would want a transfer to my father's regiment, which was the 2nd Air Formation Signals. So they said, okay, and quite frankly, I went on all sorts of various courses, which, you know, because I think they were just abiding time, they didn't know what to do with me. So eventually, of course, because the transfer hadn't come through, I went in the Royal Berkshires temporary, but that's how I went over on D-Day with the Royal Berkshires, the 8th Beach Group on Juno Beach.
How did you take to army training?
I liked it, actually. I liked the physical training, especially. I was very interested in that.
Why?
Well, because I like sport.
And army discipline?
Yes. I realised what my old tutor in pharmacy was trying to teach me. Never realised it until I went in the army, but what he was teaching me then was discipline. And that is good.
Any incidents that happened to you during the training?
No, I don't think so. No, I went in for sports, I went in for the boxing, got as far as the finals and then got beaten by a chap called Connolly, who showed me the way home. I done very well at the swimming. I swam for the Army swimming team in Colchester. Done very well, and I think I held the freestyle record for a time.
Where did you box at?
I boxed all round. The sergeant major used to take me in his jeep, but quite a lot of it was sometimes in the town hall, but all sorts of various places.
But were you a welterweight or middleweight or what?
No, I was a welterweight. I was only a light chap anyway. I round about the 9 stone mark, I think, in those days. No. Yes, it was a 9 stone weight. I went up a bit after that, at in weight.
Did you go to a battalion of the Royal Berkshires?
Yes, we went to the Hackney, what we called, was called, Hackney Gurkhas, because we were all very slim, small chaps, and I understand that some of the authority saw us there and said, oh my goodness, these weedy little chaps, they're like Gurkhas. So we got the name of the Hackney Gurkhas.
Which battalion was this?
It was just the Royal Berkshire Regiment, the 5th Royal Berkshires. 5th Royal Berkshires.
What kind of job were you given with the 5th Royal Berkshires?
Well, it's an infantryman. I was just an infantryman. That's all I was doing, and just waiting for this transfer over to Father's regiment.
Did you stay with them very long?
The Berkshires?
Yes.
Yes, from the time I went into the army, done my 6 weeks training, and then I was with them up until approximately August, I think, when we all moved over to various regiments. I went into the 5th Wiltshires, some went to the Hampshires, Dorsets, and all sorts of regiments.
Which year is this August then?
This is in 1944, you know, after D-Day.
Where did you initially join the Hackney Gurkhas?
Well, it would be in 43, yes, 1943, after we'd done our 6 weeks training.
Whereabouts in England was this?
Well, that would be in Colchester, although I know it was called Hackney Gurkhas, but that was the name we was given. We actually spent time in Southend, all over the place at one time, delivering coal, of all things, to the public, you know, because there was a shortage of fuel. And another time I had to keep guard on pigeons. Another time it was, we weren't told where we were going, we were now discovered it was guarding petrol. And I think that was somewhere in Norfolk, but I'm not sure because I never knew where we went. I could hear the sea, but...
What was this job with pigeons?
I just had to watch and keep guard on pigeons. I think they were pigeons that were taking messages. I don't know, but we just had to keep guard on them. We weren't told or everything, you know, we just told to keep guard.
And this coal delivering was house to house, was it?
Yes, oh yes, yes.
Whereabouts was that?
That was in Southend. Yeah. In the army, you move about all over the place, you know.
How did the soldiers take to jobs like delivering coal?
Oh, we didn't mind that because we got tips. Yeah, we didn't mind delivering the coal. It was always, you probably got a shilling, which was a lot of money in those days.
A shilling from each house?
Oh, well, some of them, yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes, we done quite well on those. Yeah, we didn't mind getting dirty for that. Well, I think the army was only a shilling a day in those days. Anyway, it was, you know, it was quite a lot of money.
But were you doing military training as well with the Royal Berkshires?
Oh yes, you got up in the morning and we can call it military training, but I mean, you used to go for a run, which a lot of chaps didn't like it because they smoked and I didn't smoke a lot anyway. But it didn't make any difference to me. I used to enjoy the jog. And then, of course, you'd come back and every so often you'd have assault courses where you went on assault courses. Nothing like the real thing, of course. As near as they can get it. But nothing like the real thing.
What happened? So you're moving around England with the 5th Royal Berkshires.
Yes.
What's your next memory?
Well, and then we eventually finished up at Netley, at Southampton. All under canvas. A lot of Americans there. And I think some of Glenn Miller's orchestra band chaps were there. And then eventually we went down to the Southampton docks. And I went on to the ship called the Monowire, which was a troop carrier, I think one that we eventually sold to New Zealand, and I think it came back and they made it into a troop carrier. And then we sat outside the Isle of Wight, and that was on the 5th, and it was put back until the 6th. Churchill came by in the motor launch and to inspect us all. I've never seen so many ships, a commander of ships in all my life, a terrific amount of them. And then eventually we went, and early hours of the morning there was gunfire from the destroyers and carriers. And I went down in a chute by the side of the ship. Some of the chaps went down nets, but I actually went down a chute into the landing craft and went over to land on the beach at Bernos and Mare.
What kind of a chute?
Well, it's a big canvas chute, which you've got a rating standing behind you, and because the landing crafts were bobbing up and down, and he gives you a slap on the back and says, right now, because the timing's got to be perfect, otherwise when you hit the bottom, if they don't get it right, you finish up in the water, in the drink. But landed in the landing craft and just landed on the beach. I must admit that when I landed, I thought, what the devil am I doing here? I wanted to go when I was younger, but what am I doing here? You know, I shouldn't really be here. You know, you realise this is a real thing, not like the assault courses. It's the nearest thing they can give you is an assault course, but, you know, when you see people being wounded and you want to stop and help them, but your training makes you just push ahead. You can't do that. You see, you do things automatically. You're trained to do these things. And from there, we...
Was it frightening, landing on the beach?
Yes, I was frightened. Certainly I was frightened. Yes, I don't believe anyone that says they weren't frightened. I mean, it pulls you up with a jolt. It did me. I can only speak personally. And I thought, well, I just don't know. I was fortunate that I had, because I was a young chap, I was only 18, and I had experienced chaps that... Well, they really looked after me in many ways. Some of them called me Nipper and taught me the right ways and really kept me alive, I think. I owe a lot to them.
What kind of fire were you under when you landed?
Oh, machine gun fire, mortars. So our first objective was a mortar position, which the Canadians had actually taken. We followed behind and... Then eventually we came back to unload the ammunition and food for the troops. You see, the object of the lesson was that we were going to be, if it had failed, we were going to be the last ones off, because we were the ones that have to stand and hold everything up until they got away. But thank goodness it never happened that way. We went, and then gradually you advance through Caen, Falaise, and all these places, and right up until the Seine crossing, which was not a nice one.
So once you landed on the beach, yeah. What was the first thing that you had to do?
Well, the first thing we had to do on the first night, we had to go and help the commandos out, or a section of us had to go and help the commandos out, because they were expecting a push. The commandos were on the left of where we were pinned down. And they were expecting a push through, which never happened, thank goodness. So I actually put a Bren gun up under a tank that night and stayed there. There was a lot of flak going on, but apart from that, it wasn't too bad.
Was that your job in the battalion?
No, it's only that I had to use the Bren because I was going up to that position, you know, with other troops as well. Because they were expecting this push.
Which platoon and company were you in?
I was in B Company.
Do you remember the number of the platoon?
No, I don't, actually. It's B Company, and... No, I can't remember.
What equipment and arms did you land with when you landed on the...
I landed with a rifle 303. And a terrible shovel down the back, which kept knocking my head forward, and that's where the elderly chaps, because I threw it off and said I can't stand that anymore, and they said, well, you pick it up, you'll be sorry when you've got to dig a hole to get in, and they was right. So I soon found the shovel.
So So you picked the shovel up, as they said?
No, I picked another one up, which is an American folding one, which was much smaller and much easier for me to carry. Got told off for it, but at least I learnt my lesson that, you know, instead of using your hands to dig a hole, it's far better to use a shovel.
Who told you off?
Oh, probably one of the sergeants. It's certainly one of the NCOs.
What was it like being in action for the first time?
Well, I was terribly nervous, I must admit, terribly nervous about it until you got into action, and then suddenly your training takes over and you just forget it. But every time before I went into action, I was nervous. But the training soon takes over, and that's where all the training that they gave us was a help.
How did an American folding shovel come to be on a Canadian?
Well, I think it was one that the Canadians obviously have got hold of from the American. And, you know, because they weren't far away, any of them. And, I mean, these things get passed down anyway. And picked up, somebody probably had it before me. But it was most useful. The Canadians had one or two things which the Americans had as well, I believe. You know, some of their equipment.
Were you in much contact with Canadian troops?
Oh, yes, yes, we were French Canadians. Because when we landed on the beach, they didn't really want us on the beach, the French people, a lot of them, but I think it was most useful, in a sense, having the Canadian, French Canadians especially, because they spoke the language and they were accepted. You see, there was a lot of them. I mean, there was trouble in a church there where... I don't know whether you've heard this, but I mean, where we were getting firing. It was a sniper that was picking off the lorries and hitting the drivers as they drove up the beach until they got the nets down and made it a bit easier for them to drive. And this person was a marksman, and when they went in and found her, it happened to be a lady, young woman who was had a German coat on, which apparently was her husband's. And she was picking us off right and left in the church at Spenis and Mare. A wonderful marksman.
Was she German or French?
No, she was French, married to a German. Yeah. So
what was done with her?
Well, she was left, I saw her staying on the beach. Somebody else said that when they took the jacket off, she had a wedding dress on. I never saw that. All I saw was a German uniform on her. Which a Canadian, whether he went in and got her or the Beaufort guns hit the steeple several times, whether that had killed her, I don't know. But he came out and just threw her on the floor. But she had this army uniform on, which was a German uniform.
Did you see her captured?
Well, she wasn't captured, she was dead. She was dead. He just came out, and whether he'd been in and shot her or what, I don't know.
So you saw her body?
Oh, I saw it. Yeah, oh, yes, I saw the uniform on a body. Didn't know it was a woman at the time. But, oh, yes. I saw a lot of bodies, but, I mean, unfortunately, a lot of them were ours on the beaches.
But you knew that one had been the sniper?
Oh, well, yes, I suppose you do, in a way, because, you know, somebody said, oh, that's the one that was shooting at us from the steeple. But,
So, what else happened to you on your first day on the beach in Normandy?
Just what I'm saying. It was just a nightmare. Complete nightmare. You know, when you realise I was 18 years old, I suspect there are others there 18 years old, but the first experience I've ever had, and as I say, I wanted to get there. I wanted to have a go, but when I landed and I saw people going down right and left of me, I thought, what the devil am I doing here? There's no joy in war. I mean, I come from a family of soldiers, and I suppose you listen to their stories, and when you're younger you watch Tom Mix, the Cowboys, and all this business going on, and It's just not the same thing. Not the same thing at all. It's all make-believe until you really hit the real thing, and then you know you're in war. Terrible thing, terrible.
Did the situation on Juno Beach seem to be well organised or not?
Yes, I think so. You've got to realise there was chaos there with everything happening, but, you've got good people who are telling you, right, I mean, we were drilled, well and truly drilled, before we went, we were told exactly what we had to do, and I think that went reasonably well, as far as I can remember. But, I mean, an awful lot of brave people out there, an awful lot of brave people.
How did you spend your first night in Normandy?
The first night under a tank, to where the commandos were expecting a push. There was a bit of a gap there, and they thought, oh, well, they're going to break through there. But as I say, we went there, and it was all right. Thank goodness they didn't break through.
That was when
I think that was a Panzer division. Can't remember the number of them, but I think it was a Panzer division. But it was all right.
That was when you had the Bren gun?
Oh, yes, that's when I had a Bren.
But you didn't use
because,
it?
Yes, I sent tracers out. Yes, I had to send tracers. Tracer bullets were... I mean, there was a lot of flak going on all night, but it wasn't quite so drastic as one would expect on the... like we did on the landing. You see, one of our landing craft had got hit a mine, a bottle mine, I think it was. They had all these ramps along the water, and it hit those. We lost quite a number of people there on the beaches.
Do you remember what happened to you on the second day?
Yes, we went in. I think that was the second day. I think when I saw the person from the steeple that got shot, I think that was the second day. But. No, I know a few days later when we went into the town, I know one of the chaps wanted a haircut, and I can remember standing on guard while he had a haircut, which was ladies cutting the hair, all things. And also we had a couple of Catholic lads who wanted to go in the church and keeping guard there. And I thought at the time, God, what a strange thing to have to do. You know, somebody's gone in the church and you've got to keep guard and make sure... they're all right while they go into church. But silly things like that.
I think you said earlier that you felt unwelcome from the French.
Yes. Well, I think we was all right. They didn't want us there when we landed because they were being treated well by the Germans. And they didn't want us there when we landed, not really. And as I say, some of them were married to the Germans. And... but the French Canadians speaking the language, of course, was, in my opinion, a great help to us. I'm sure of it.
What impression did the French Canadians make on you?
Well, I thought they were mad. I was very pleased they were on our side. Quite honestly, I thought they were mad as March hares. I mean, they were very bitter. They got very bitter. Because I imagine they felt it was part of their land anyway. You know, landing in France. But, no, very bitter. I think they had one or two people that were strung up by the Germans and being killed. And as I know, I think it was one of our captains said to us, whatever you do, do not try to stop them. They are fighting mad and they will shoot you because they've said they're not going to take any prisoners.
What do you remember happening next to you in Normandy?
I remember sitting back on my pack and looking up in the sky and seeing a lot of planes coming over bombing Caen, which they moved us back because they felt that they were getting a bit close to us. And we went into Caen, and I've never seen concrete like it. Huge sheets of concrete. And terrible, terrible mess. The bombers made of that. Terrible. And Falaise Gap. It's all... and the smell is another thing that You know, you smell death, really. And even now, if I think about it long enough, I get it back, even after all this time. You get the smell of death.
Do you remember the places that you moved through in
Normandy? No, quite. If I'm honest and truthful about it, I was just one of the ordinary infantrymen, and half the time I didn't think we knew where the devil we were going.